Some other places, a co-op might do the same kind of thing, mm-hmm. right? But there aren't enough farmers to support co-ops.
Yeah, not anymore.
I don't know if that's true. I think that if there was enough startup capital for something mm-hmm. like that, potentially. Mm-hmm. We've been asked for some grain processing equipment. The problem with that is that there's not many people that do grain, and they all are going to be harvesting at roughly the same time. So that's a hard one. We also just have very little space for any more equipment, and it takes a lot of staff hours to manage an equipment rental program.
You said $50 for the poultry processing
mm-hmm.
unit. What does it cost to put it together, to put together the processing unit?
All of the equipment is Featherman equipment, and I think it was about, I want to say it was $4,000 or $5,000 mm-hmm. to buy all the equipment, and then the trailer was extra. We bought that from a trailer place, and that was like, oh gosh, I don't know, $1,500, $2,000. Mm-hmm. And as far as like maintenance and stuff, it's not super maintenance intensive. We do charge a cleaning fee, so the vast majority of people bring it back clean enough that we don't have to fuss with it. And then we provide pretty minimal supplies, so there's not a huge okay. amount of upkeep. I don't know, $8,000 for the initial investment.
Okay.
Something
in there. So you're looking at a 150, 160 rentals to pay for the money that went into it, plus any maintenance cost.
Yeah, and really the big piece is the staff time to manage the program. That's the part that we struggle with. And when we first rented it, when we first purchased it, it was $25 to rent, and we just had to, move it back up. And some people were like, this is great, and we had people who stopped renting it, which is unfortunate, but.
You'd think they'd come back after one season.
Yeah.
Having had to do that as a kid, yes.
Yeah. It's not fun plucking without, I mean, the automatic plucker, you can pluck 3 birds in like 60 seconds.
Nice.
So there's really not a comparison. But you can also make your own out of a washing machine, and you can buy the rubber fingers. And really the plucker that's the star of the show. I mean, people rent the thing because of the plucker. You can get a really big pot and scald your chickens. And there's kill cones, you know, you can make kill cones out of cones,
traffic cones,
yeah. Things like that. It's really about the plucker.
all about the plucker.
It's all about the plucker.
So the last question for me, does the machine, because you mentioned the cones, does the machine also, I'm not sure what the term we're supposed to use here is.
Dispatch?
Yes, thank you. Okay, execute.
No, it doesn't. No,
render
you have to.
The
No. So it's like it's the kill cones. It's on a stand, and you have to put the bird in, and then slice their throat, and then they bleed out.
Yeah.
And then you put them in the scalder, and you can either hold their feet. Or there's an arm that kind of you
getting
can
graphy.
Put their feet in.
I told you, you'd eat less meat if you had to do it.
I can just see the sketch of this thing in motion.
I should have brought. We have a flyer that has it's all set up with rubber chickens.
Okay.
So you can see how it's all set up.
Thank you. You're gonna have to edit your PowerPoint to put that plucker at the end.
Yeah. So continuing with our current programs, Stewardship Forestry has become one of our large programs because we have a full-time employee that is working on doing free site visits to small forest landowners and free forest management plans. As I said, he's working in Clark, Kellett, and Wakayakum counties, we're considering, he'll do site visits to anybody. He'll do the forest management plans for people with over 5 acres of timber. We also do fish barrier removal projects for eligible landowners with forestry on their property that are considered small forest landowners, they can get free culvert replacements through FFFP, which is the Family Forest Fish Passage Program. So we don't run that program, but we regularly implement that program. Usually we do one bridge project a year.
Is that state funding?
Yes. So I always like to throw these in here because they're very exciting. So this is our most recent project that we wrapped up this last December. It's on Mason Creek. So these two pictures were taken from roughly the same angle. I think the trees closest were removed, but kind of this clump of trees right here is the same as this clump of trees. Mm-hmm. And this was a culvert that the forest land, if you're looking this way, the forest land is behind you, and this culvert was caving in. So this is the culvert that was replaced, and there was quite a large plunge pool here. And again, roughly the same angle looking upstream, downstream. And then this is the bridge that was put in. It was a 70-foot bridge. The whole project was roughly $250,000, zero cost to the landowner.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Is there plenty of funding for those compared to the need? Is there more need than there is funding available?
There's more need than there is funding available, yeah. So they are prioritized. But I always suggest these are typically driveway culverts or one of the requirements for this program is that the logging truck has to drive over this road in order to get to the logs. Hypothetically, you don't actually have to log, that's not a requirement, but were you to log, the logging truck would have to go over whatever that barrier is to get to the logs. If you know people that are small forest landowners, that have an undersized culvert or a collapsing culvert, have them sign up for the FFFP program, especially if it looks like their culvert is going to blow out, because if they're signed up and their culvert blows out, they are still eligible. If they haven't signed up, their culvert blows out, it's no longer a fish passage barrier, and then they're no longer eligible. So I always say, you know,
sign them up.
and you're more than welcome to contact. Yeah, well, more than welcome to contact us if you need help, or if you know of people that have driveway culverts, or it doesn't have to be on a driveway. Okay, so what is next for us? We are continuing and expanding our watershed stewardship classes. We've got another grant for those to continue those and then add a few smaller, more topical best management practice classes. We haven't quite nailed down what we're going to do, but maybe rain garden classes. We're going to also expand outreach for ag landowners. We're going to try and do some more pasture management, manure management classes. We also partnered with a slew of partners. It was us, the Watershed Alliance, Clark County Clean Water, Clark County Public Health, and WSU Extension to apply for a grant through the Department of Ecology that we called Poop Smart Clark. This is a pollution identification and correction program that we had decided to do with this, with all these partners, and I was introduced to Poop Smart, which is done up in Skagit County, which as soon as I saw the presentation on Poop Smart, I was just tickled, and I thought it was great. They have done what a lot of us natural resource people kind of try and avoid, which is we say, you know, fecal coliform in the water, or we dance around the topic, and they just jumped right in. So it's these poop emojis. And they so the PoopSmart Clark, it's a pollution identification and correction program, and it's multifaceted. So the whole PoopSmart piece is in the it's in the correction. So step one is we identify the pollution. So we're working with partners, primarily Clark County Clean Water and Clark County Public Health, to identify where the pollutants are. This was targeted at the East Fork Lewis watershed, but it's something that could potentially be expanded later, and that's what we would like. So step one, identify pollution. Step two, correct pollution. That's done with actually implementing projects on the ground, but it's also done with education. And for the education arm, we were going with PoopSmart, which I think would be very effective and eye-catching. And I hear chuckles, so check.
Yeah.
But the problem with my septic tank, I checked, it doesn't look like that.
It doesn't look like that? No. Yeah. No. And they have this whole...
Every time I do that check in the future, I will see that image.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a better one.
Yeah.
I said, does this pass?
You already did it.
And then we've got the identification, correction, and then effectiveness monitoring. So this was a grant that we all applied for in this last ecology round in October. We unfortunately did not get it, but we are going to do it again. We're all meeting this Thursday to actually start the process of fixing some of the things that ecology didn't love, and it didn't score poorly. It just didn't. There's very little money this year for ecology grants, so we're going to jump back on that horse and keep going with it. I'm really excited about it. I think it's a great potential program that really it has the potential to cover all of Clark County and be a really big and effective program. Pollution identification and correction programs are done all throughout Puget Sound and are extremely effective. They're primarily targeted at shellfish beds. There's really nothing saying that we can't use them here. There's just not as much, I didn't find as much information on people using PIC programs outside of shellfish areas, but there's, I mean, you're just locating pollution and fixing it.
I've got a question for both you and Eric. So there is, there are grants and low interest loans from Ecology for septic system repair.
Mm-hmm.
What about for maintenance? This is on my mind because I just got my tank inspected yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Every 3 years, and it needs to be pumped. And so I wasn't anticipating that, but I can afford an extra, $400 or $500 to get it pumped. There are a lot of rural landowners who an extra $400 or $500 is a real burden. So there's those programs for repair or replacement for septic systems. Does the county or the state or anyone that you're aware of have just kind of basic maintenance programs for low-income households? So people don't just say, oh, it's fine, until their septic system isn't functional anymore because it's filled up. The drain field's not operational.
So there are programs for repair and replacement. I don't know if there are programs for maintenance, like pumping.
Right.
What we were going to do in our grant was ask for funds to pay for what's the word I'm looking for? Inspection.
Mm-hmm.
So it was going to be, I think, $125 or something for that.
Mm-hmm.
We also asked for funds for repair and replacement. We didn't do anything for maintenance, and I don't know if there's anybody that does.
Yeah, some people are on a yearly inspection.
Right. Yeah,
that's our system.
Because you have a fancier,
I guess.
System.
Yeah, it's because it pumps uphill into the sun.
On gravity.
Yeah.
So that's a good question. I don't know. The max that you can ask for Ecology is $500,000, and we hit that max with what we were doing. I think that the idea behind this is, let's start and see what happens. And if we get a lot of feedback from people saying what we really need is maintenance help, I think that that would be a great place to expand into.
Yeah, I'm thinking in terms of cost effectiveness, because it's not uncommon for one reason or another to put it off, and put it off, and put it off, and then the drain field is filled up with sludge and the system needs to be replaced. And so by skimping on that $400 or $500, you end up with a, you know, I don't even know what the going rate is for replacing a system or a drain field, but it's got to be thousands, if not
$10, $15, $20
The research that I was doing, it was saying that repairs and replacements were running between like $5,000 to $15,000 on average. Okay. And it can definitely go higher. So I'll think about that. I think that that's a great avenue that we hadn't really considered.
It's almost to my understanding, voluntary compliance. I mean, you have to do it, but there's no enforcement mechanism. So if I can't afford it, and no one's going to follow up, I'm just not going to do it, right?
Why is there no enforcement?
Well, I can't say for sure. All I can say is somehow mine got by for a long time, and I called in and said to check.
I can answer that. Because they send, the health department sends the letters out, but they don't have the staff to follow up and actually...
Right, like if you didn't make your car payment, it's like, hey, now, or your tags on your vehicle.
So they'll send a second notice, but that's probably...
Right. Well, absolutely. So the
operations and maintenance specialist is what they call the private person. You know, usually from a septic repair and installation company that comes out to inspect it, and they just file the report electronically, saying that they did the inspection. I haven't seen what the reports look like, so I don't know if it includes, like, you know, how many inches of sludge, how many inches of sludge.
Yeah, and there's a little sketch.
So it includes that, but if...
But if there's help, I think it's a good point, if there's help for... Because if we're not enforcing it, and that I can't verify, but I...
Well, if... And
people would be... Yeah.
There's... I think that from... At least from... writing this grant, they don't want to do they don't like to do enforcement, and I don't think they have the staff for it. That was what we were finding in our grant.
So but
is it public, public health that would do the enforcement?
Yeah,
but to your point, if
said nobody wants to enforce, nobody has the staff for it, but at some point you have to enforce.
But it's a public health issue. I mean, we have the inspection to make sure we avoid all of this nastiness, but if I can't afford it, the inspection. And I know no one. There's not going to be any penalty. No one's even going to hassle me, and it's a burden on me. I'm not going to do it. But unless if I have assistance to do it.
Yeah. Now, if your neighbors start complaining because your property smells and there's, you know,
my
because
neighbor
the
calls,
public knows then it becomes more where they have to do something about it because it's known. But if it's someone not pumping, they're not going to do anything.
But I don't know. I guess
And by the time it affects the neighbors, then we're out of the neighborhood of a $500.
It's way too late. Exactly.
Yeah, way too
late. We're up to $10,000.
I mean, I like getting mine inspected because in case there's something I need to catch, I can catch it early before. It's a complete system failure, which causes harm to everything, including my checkbook. But
We had to replace a part the last time. We didn't have it pumped. We didn't expect that, but we did. This time we did. You know, they did the inspection, but other times, you know, in between, we've done the inspection through the small acreage. I think it is that has the program, which helps.
Yes, if you're on a gravity-fed septic system, you can inspect your own system every other time, and that inspection is due every 3 years. So WSU Extension puts on about 5 or 6 well and septic inspection workshops a year, which are incredibly popular. I think they had over almost 300 people go through that program last year.
Yeah, and I'm on March, so it's right after I get my tax return, and I'm fine with everything. $100 of that going to a pro to do it. You know, I dig up the access hatches, but you know, it was just kind of more like the surprise, oh, well, there's another, you know, $400 or $500 I'm going to be spending, and then just kind of thinking about how people, that's a high enough amount that people will put it off if they can't afford it, and hope for the best, and the people that can't afford it, they're already on a shoestring living, you know, paycheck to paycheck, or having to already use credit cards for groceries once in a while, they're just going to say, you know what, forget it, and
roll the dice.
And roll the dice.
And take it out of the sales money, you know, the sales price.
And so eventually that turns into a failed system that costs more and you know, could be a public health hazard. So I'm just trying to think about how to be penny wise on it and how to help people with that if they have a legitimate need and they're not just like, well, I don't want to have to cut back on lattes for a couple months.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Zori, you mentioned this program was very effective. How so?
The position identification.
Up north, yeah,
So I wish I should have brought the kind of the stats with me.
Sorry.
But no, it's fine.
I'm not
there are other counties that basically buy PIC programs are as effective as they are because they combine multiple partners and multiple areas of expertise, and they all come together and they're sort of like all working in their special arenas, but the PIC program offers a mechanism that everybody's talking to each other. Mm-hmm. So prior to us applying for this, there was really no mechanism for public health to talk to us about septic because we're a conservation district. What do we have to do with septic?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that we actually get project funds that go for water quality. It doesn't matter if the poop comes from a cow or a human.
Mm-hmm.
I can spend it on water quality. And so for the purposes of this grant, I threw in the money that I get from our commission into this and said, I will pay for $50,000 of septic system replacements. When you're all partnering together, you can leverage all of your time and resources so much more effectively than when you're doing it on your own. So these have been very effective up north in really fixing shellfish beds and making them harvestable more of the time. And that's what they're really focused on. Most of the data that I've seen is around shellfish and communities that have septic systems and livestock on coastal shellfish beds.
Okay. And now your program talking about septic in the area of the county where I live, I know there's some older homes where the septics are, I don't know how to, there's multiple systems. Some of the gray water just runs out into the back stream or backyard, like the toilet will go into a septic system.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those people I know do want to fix those things. Is that funding they're able to get?
So right
now, most obviously this is an older home issue because we wouldn't allow that in newer construction. But
so right now the funding that we have, we didn't actually get the funding yet. So right now I don't have the funding.
Okay.
Hypothetically though.
Okay.
What we are going to do, if somebody has a septic issue, there's several avenues. They can find somebody to fix it. We can connect them to Craft 3, which does low interest I think even no interest loans for a period of time. They fund it all and then the person pays it back over I think 10, 15, 20, 30 years at very, very minimal interest. Or they could be eligible for cost share, which is where we would come in. We were trying to have a system where we really identified the people that were most in need that would go for the cost share. The thing with the Craft 3 versus cost share that's a little bit interesting is with our cost share, we require we pay 75%, they pay 25%. Mm. Now, if you're spending $10,000 on a septic system, not everybody can pay 25%. So Some of the most low-income people may actually benefit from Craft 3, where they don't have that upfront cost.
Mm-hmm.
They end up paying more, but they pay it over 20 years as opposed to paying 75% of it right now. So those were kind of our three options.
Okay, thank you.
If you have people that are actively, they actively have a septic system issue right now, I would say Craft 3 is their best bet at this exact moment.
But even if you get this funding, it wouldn't apply countywide, as I understand it, because this is targeted to the East Fork of the Lewis and part of a voluntary watershed plan to address the water quality limiting factors, bacteria being one of them. And I might just say, I'm on the board of the Conservation District, so just full disclosure.
All right, so this is my last slide.
Were you at the East Fork
partnership? No, you weren't?
No,
okay, all right, good. Then my joke is not duplicated for you. Persistence pays off. The last couple years have been really rough for the Conservation District, but things are really, really looking up. I mean, I can't say this anymore because our second employee was hired Valentine's Day a year ago. But a couple weeks ago, I was able to say, 1 year ago, I was the only person working in my office, and I now have two employees.
And were you part-time?
I was, but I'm still part-time. But that's okay. And two of us are part-time. So we have 2.6 employees in our office, which is three people, which is a whole lot better than just the one, which is how it was a year ago. We are always looking for new landowners, we're always looking for new projects and new grants. I always like to say, like, people, we really want to hear from landowners who need assistance. We can't always help people right away, but if you stick with us, we can usually find grants or find ways to help. I don't know how many of you interact with multiple landowners. I don't know what all of your jobs are, but Conservation districts are the best kept secret. Nobody knows about us, we are really here to help individuals. We're here to help landowners or land managers with their land, and we're very good at fitting people into our various grant buckets. And if we, for some reason, can't fit someone into a grant bucket, we can figure out a way to make it happen generally.
So those lands don't have to be a particular size, except for...
Except
for some programs.
Exactly, with specific programs, yes. But generally, no, they don't. We work with people with just a parcel, in Uptown Vancouver. We don't do that as much because there's not as much that we can do there, but we absolutely can work with people on quarter of an acre. How much is how big is a parcel in downtown Vancouver? Less than that.
Yeah, I'm thinking of more like an acre or...
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it would be great to, if there is collaborations that can be developed between like public entities and the Conservation District, because I know you at the conservation, I don't know, I'm not familiar with everything, but I know you have access to some pots of money that wouldn't be available to county government or city government. And can you elaborate on that a little bit, or if you're able to work on public lands?
So we are able to work on public or private lands. Conservation districts are one of the only agencies, state agencies, that can give funds to private landowners, give public funds to private landowners. We're really good at partnering. We are small and scrappy, and so we're always happy to partner. We have access to the Washington State Conservation Commission funds, and there's not huge pots of money, but for example, every biennium, every 2 years, we can get a minimum of two projects of $50,000 each, so $100,000 every 2 years from them. And that's not money that anybody else can get. And that's a good amount of money for project dollars. We can basically partner with anybody to do a lot of different things. So we've partnered with the county to do that PIC program grant, but also the watershed map. We've partnered with WSU Extension to do classes and pamphlets and the videos that Eric showed that were on the map from WSU Extension had our logo, our old logo, but our logo on them. There are pots of money that we can't access because we aren't a 501c3, but there are some that are specifically for special districts or conservation districts. There's not as many that somebody like the county couldn't access, but we could. But we're always willing to partner, for sure. Yeah. Any other questions?
I got two questions that kind of feed into each other. Like, so one might help answer the other one, so I'll just pitch them both and then you tell me how they blend.
Okay.
Kind of looking at like how you're perceived in the county, what type of perception you get from people. And if I were to go out on a limb, I would guess that the demographic that would usually have a more negative opinion might be more in the rural parts of the county sometimes, which is slightly ironic given that the conservation district should benefit that area the most. Thinking politically. And then tying into that, if it is at all applicable, how do you explain if people have the issue with the idea that there's funds that they in one way or another are associating as public funds
mm-hmm.
going to the benefit of private individuals or property owners? How do you guys usually address that?
I find that we don't get a lot of pushback from landowners because the landowners that are up in arms about things aren't upset at us because we are the ones coming in with the white hats. So the only times that I have had people that are really not happy about our presence is because they have an issue with a regulatory agency. Like it's basically universally either Department of Ecology or Clark County, and they're upset that they have to do anything different. And both of those agencies say you can voluntarily work with the conservation district. They're usually happy that we're there to help. Rurally, politically, I don't like that there's microphones.
Well, just be aware there are microphones,
yeah.
And this is a public meeting.
Yeah. So,
and you can decline to answer.
I don't. Our county politically is interesting. The most supportive party of the party that is most supportive of conservation districts is oftentimes Republican. So I don't really encounter what I think you're talking about. Now, you were at the public hearing, and
I know public hearings are like a small sample of posting something on Nextdoor.
Right.
Yeah. Ease of the internet, but
yeah.
There's still people that get up early to go do that.
And the people that spoke against us at the public hearing were actually from one specific group.
Right.
And
their claims were slightly, if I may, conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
At least that was my interpretation of some of it.
I mean, as far as taking public funds to give to private landowners, the funds that we give to private landowners are specifically designated for natural resource conservation. So it's not like we're taking funds from the local homeless shelter and giving it to a manure storage facility.
And they're for public good.
And it is for public good.
Commercial, totally commercial success.
In my view, what is most successful in terms of improving natural resources really is individuals doing voluntary conservation. If you guys want a good read, go to the WDFW Facebook page, because talk about angry people. Every time I read those, I just think...
The what page?
WDFW Facebook page, the Washington Fish and Wildlife.
Oh.
There are so many angry people about these broad overreaching policies. They feel like they don't have a say in what's going on with their natural resources. And what conservation districts do is say, here are funds to do something to improve the natural resources on your property, where you live. Or if it's in a public area, shared property, where we live, where we all can enjoy. I don't know if I'm answering your question or I'm just sort of dancing around it. I generally get very little negative feedback for what the conservation district does. I don't think I would still be in this job if I got a whole bunch of negative feedback, because that's not fun.
Yeah.
And even in that rates and charges process, we had so many letters of support. I actually went through a public records request. I believe that there were 2 negative letters of support written to the county counselors. There were 3 people that spoke against us. 2 of them were from one group who it was misinformed. And one of them thought that we were going to be taxing him as a low-income senior, which he was also misinformed.
Because they were exempt.
They were exempt. And considering what we were asking for, I was like, that's not bad. Only having 3 people... I mean, people could have really come out, and we really weren't asking for that much, but people could have come out, and we only had 3 people.
Conservation districts are really venerable organizations that go back to the Dust Bowl, and at that time, you know, it saved the farm. They saved the farm. You know, and as the average age of a farmer is really pretty old, you know, are they? We're just a generation or two away from people who are impacted by that. So I think, yeah, I agree. I think it's seen as a resource, and that, you know, you're not the regulator, so it's okay.
Yeah, and I do think that I love that I can go to an uptown Vancouver house and talk to them, and I can go to a North County property with, you know, 10 cows and talk to them, and I am received positively from both landowners. I have to change my what I'm talking about, because they're just different properties, but we are really seen as beneficial and helpful, and I like having a white hat on. I don't want to be a regulator. It's not what I want. I like coming in and saying, this is what they're telling you to do, but I can help you pay for it. Mm-hmm. That's fun.
Yeah, being a regulator is not fun.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
There's a place for regulators.
No, there absolutely is. And yeah.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I don't have a strong sense of your strategic focus. Really.
Yeah.
If, you know, you're looking for people to come in with requests, and then, for example, you bring on a forester who actually ends up working for a couple of counties in order to satisfy your request, in some ways that puts you in touch with where the needs are. But it's, you know, the sense of what you do as a result is sort of diffuse if there's not a statement, you know, here are our priorities, or here's our plan, or here's, you know, even this 2 years we're going to focus on A, B, and C, but let us know if you see something else out there, because that informs us in the future. But if you don't have that A, B, and C,
yeah,
you're like,
It's hard to do that with grant funding because you can set what your priorities are, but it really doesn't matter if there's no money for it. Mm-hmm. So if you had asked me in October what my priorities were, it would have been that PIC program. Mm-hmm. And that's still my priority, mm-hmm. but there's nobody paying me to do that. So right now, my priority is forestry, and it's agricultural landowners, and it's our watershed stewardship classes. Our overarching priority is always soil and water health. So anything that we do is going to tie into water quality or soil health. But that's really broad.
Right.
Very,
right.
Very broad. Under rates and charges, it was our goal to have five program areas. Okay. And that really still is our goal.
Mm-hmm.
But as of right now, I'm trying to kind of streamline the number of little, like what I'm not trying to go out and create entirely new grant programs for entirely new things, which is something that we have historically done. It's fun, it's easier to get grants that way, but it's not sustainable. So I'm trying to get back to what are we really good at? We're really good at providing technical assistance to farmers. So that's a really big one. There's a whole lot of forestry in our county, a huge amount of forestry. That is an important piece right there. But we can't just be working on farms and forests because our county is so much more than that. And that's where that watershed stewardship piece comes in to do education in the more urban areas. We also have site visits linked up with that. Those three programs right there really does cover a lot of the county.
Yep.
We're still working on
what
our focus is going to be. But it will be within water quality and soil for sure.
Okay.
Thanks. So one more pair of questions on the forester that you're sharing. Mm-hmm. Those counties have their own conservation districts.
They do.
And so how much of that forester's time do you get, and is his time fully spoken for? Does he have time hanging around with his feet up on the desk, or is he pretty much hopping all the time?
So we hired Jeff in April, and so he hasn't even been here a year. He has a 9-month waiting list for forestry plans. Mm-hmm. He lives in our office full-time, but he goes out to Cowlitz and Wyoming counties. It's handy having him in our office because I sort of get more of him. We haven't done a lot of outreach because we did a little bit of outreach to the Farm Forestry Association, and his list got filled up. So we've done really minimal outreach because I don't want people on a wait list for 3 years because they're going to start to get upset.
Right.
So with very little outreach, he's been pretty well split between the three counties, especially given the population differences. I mean, it wouldn't make sense for him to spend a third of his time in Wyoming County because there's so many fewer people there. But he is working on plans in Cowlitz and Wyoming, probably more in Clark because it's a little bit, there's just more of us. And he's here. But he's always willing to, you know, if you have, I don't know, talks or things you want him to do, what are you thinking?
Well, so what I'm thinking is one of, for East County Fire and Rescue, I'm one of the commissioners.
Okay.
On one of the elected commissioners on the board there. And so one of the things, you know, we're in the southeast corner of the county outside of Camas and Washougal. And so one of the things we've had a lot of discussion about as a board is like firewise and defensible space and those sorts of things on rural properties. And obviously if someone's on, you know, a pasture property, that's not really an issue. It's really the properties that are partially or completely forested, including right up to around the house in some cases, that we're concerned about as a fire district. And so we've had a lot of discussions about how to use our firefighters limited downtime to reach out to landowners, hook them up with DNR information like FireWise and so on. And so I'm wondering if your forester is connected into that and has explored resources through Department of Natural Resources.
Yeah.
Especially as forest fires become more of an issue on the west side with hotter, drier, longer dry season summers.
Yes, he has.
Okay.
The program that he's part of is the Southwest Washington RCPP, which is the Regional Conservation Partnership Program. So he's part of a suite of two other district foresters, DNR and WDFW, all working on this project together. So he's hooked up with a few DNR foresters through that. But
what is that called again?
It's the Southwest Washington Small Forest Land RCPP. And I think if you Google that, there's probably a website that comes up that just sort of shows you the outside of the thing and, you know, which district are you in, click there. And I brought information that I put on this shelf right here, so you're welcome to grab some stuff in there, and one of them is his contact. He went to Humboldt State, and I think he learned some FireWise stuff there, but he also is recently taking a class in FireWise. He's got a ton of material. I think he would be great to send landowners to, with the caveat that
he's busy.
He's kind of busy. We kind of have our fingers crossed that we're going to try and mesh some funds together to get him a little help so that he can be freed up to do more site visit work. And there's actually a great opportunity regarding FireWise specifically that we really want to pounce on, because it's a big need in our county.
Maybe you could provide a letter of support if you do decide to apply for that.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
I would be happy to provide a letter of support
for that.
I lied to you earlier. I have one more question. One thing that's interesting about kind of the western states compared to the southeastern states is the western states for private forest practices tend to have regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Southeastern states tend to have suggestions. But on the flip side, southeastern states tend to require that there's and for most of the east, tends to require that you have a management plan put together by a certified professional forester before you do harvest.
Mm-hmm.
California requires that as well, somewhat uniquely in the western U.S., as far as I understand it. And so we don't have a lot of just kind of private consulting foresters, that don't work for a company or don't work for state government.
Mm-hmm.
So is your forester connected with any private consulting foresters? I'm thinking in terms of reducing the waiting list by being able to farm out people that have some means to consulting foresters, to certified professional foresters who could do the planning, the evaluation, for a fee, for those who can afford it, and then kind of, I'm back to the means testing here, but...
He does have a list of people, and I know, just off the top of my head, I know one of them. I know there's got to be more than just one, but I haven't actually seen the list, but I'm pretty sure that there is a list. I know HFI is one of them. I don't know what that stands for, but I can get you whatever the list is.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. NRCS may also have a list, but I can get you a list.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of people that are just wanting plans, or they would just like a plan to?
Yeah. I'm just kind of trying to think a couple steps ahead in my case. Mostly what we run into is a fire district is. Problems with a lack of defensible space, where if there is a wildfire, there's no chance of homes being savable, and actually vice versa, where if someone, had a chimney fire or you know, a dryer vent or something else started their house on fire, it's going to just jump into the vegetation. And so it creates a risk that can pass either way. And I think like a lot of places that isn't too far from population centers, we've had a lot of, you know, 50 acre parcels turned into 5-10 acre parcels. And so along the road you've got these houses, the rest of it is still forested in a dense, you know, post-harvest, 20, 30, 40 year post-harvest plantation. So you've still got all that vertical and horizontal fuel continuity, but now you've got houses, 10 houses in it, whereas before you had zero or one. And so I'm just kind of thinking about a lot of those folks don't have any forest management experience, and so the challenge for us as a fire district is trying to reduce fire danger and the attendant risk to our residents and our firefighters. And so I'm trying to think of how to grapple with that while at the same time getting forest management, you know, expertise out into the community.
Yeah.
Rather than just cut 150 foot swath, is there something where that get 150 foot swath plus let's, you know, get your forest structure to something that is more diverse, more dynamic, and more resilient to disturbances.
Have you guys connected with NRCS at all, the Natural Resource Conservation Service?
No.
I'm gonna interrupt a little bit. Yeah. I'm sorry on this, but we're running really close on time.
Yeah.
So if there's a fire related piece, if we can end up having you guys be in touch and on
that's
that,
because
I
guys.
Yeah.
I was trying to stretch it as long as I could.
No, that's totally fine.
Sorry. I've got other questions for you, but again, so I'll reach out. We can get your contact info. So
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. And I'm gonna be here till, I mean, that's okay, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So all my pamphlets and stuff are there if you guys want to take stuff.
Can you make a quick staff liaison report, Alex?
Yes, I can. The Water Resources Division Manager, a.k.a. Dean/Greg's position, has officially been posted, and we're receiving applications. So Greg's term as interim is shortening down significantly.
Second news.
That's been great.
And then I know Jeff was actually interviewing candidates for one of the engineering tech positions to help address the mapping needs that are required by the permit. You've also gotten your calendar invites for the rest of the meetings for the year, as well as the two special meetings and the field trip. Sorry about that, but it's just like, I'm just going to get them out there.
I'm just glad to have them. Just pack them up.
I figure it's like, just out there and just nail them out. Reminder, the special meeting is going for the spring is March 25th. October 7th is the one in the fall. Have the entire meeting set aside to work on strategic planning. Please include me in your work group meetings if you are planning on doing email and your emails if your group is planning on meeting to work on it, because I can come and help and be available and be a note taker as you delve into that. And as I was realizing today, Marie can actually go, since she's been spearheading this strategic planning, she can go to all the meetings except for research, if you fully are staffed, because then we'd have a quorum. But but the other ones, she would be able to help go and facilitate that as well. So, but if you're going to go, please let me know, and I'll make sure I can work around everything. The afternoon of May 19th, we're slated for our annual field trip. We're going to focus on the east side. We'll come back to the west side, maybe figure out Vancouver Lake or whatever the following year. I've got that written down. May 6th, our next...
Alice, I'm sorry, did you send out an invite for May 19th?
No.
Maybe,
no? Okay.
Maybe not. Maybe
okay.
It goes, I think.
Just
I,
making sure I didn't miss it.
I sent it out.
You said a lot.
Okay, let's put it this way. I put it out to the staff. The staff knows about it.
What,
May 19th.
What time are
you
doing?
1 to 5 is what I've got down right now. But I think we'll probably do something that we did in the past where we meet here and get in the van and go. Or in the vans and go, depending on, and if there's people that need to
meet us at a specific location. We'll obviously publish where we're going to be and the time that we expect to be there, so that it's there, and I'll make sure that everybody can take notes if there's anything going on and you don't have any actionable decisions. So let me think. And we're finalizing all that and getting that done. I'm looking at a couple different things with like seeing one of the monitoring stations and that they do out there, as well as the stormwater facilities maintenance one by the fire station, and a couple of those things. So I've got a couple good ideas from talking with the staff about how to do that. So and then I'll ask you for more input if you have it in March. So if you think of anything, email me and we'll nail it all down. I'm going to work on it at the end of March, first part of April, nailing all of that down.
So have you contacted Chief at East County Fire and Rescue, or does that remain to be done?
I have not gotten that far yet.
Okay. Just I will give sure. you my ECFR card, okay. So you can get a hold of me and I'll help you get in touch with Chief Kearns.
Perfect. The May 6th, our next meeting on May 6th, the regular meeting, Rainey Rao from the City of Vancouver has requested that the Watershed Congress high school participants come in and observe this meeting, and then however many there are, then do a presentation, and then do their individual presentations. We won't know the exact numbers, but I got thinking about the logistics on this. And if we had a short meeting, maybe an hour business meeting, and then listen to the presentations. And from what I was understanding, in my head I was thinking 15, 20 minutes, and that's too long. But Eric was saying that they're really closer to 3 to 5, 7 minutes. So we should be able to, even if there was the maximum numbers, she was saying like 25 or 30 kids, but they'd be groups of kids, so there really wouldn't be that many.
She told me today that she was only up 3 presenting groups.
Okay. So we could easily have them have a presentation. And my thought was, well, if we needed to, we could split it up and have half in one room and half in another room. If for some reason they all of a sudden had 16 groups show up and say, hi, we want to do this, because we could make it happen. So, and then you would give them feedback on their presentation, because it's where they go out and do the monitoring. Most of the time they go out and do their monitoring, and then they present their research to the Congress.
Did you get my email about the alternative of doing it at the Water Resources Center?
Yes, maybe not.
So originally when they were talking about having more groups, yeah. I thought that might be way easier than trying to do the logistics here. With 3 groups presenting, it's kind of either way. But
I think it'd probably be easiest to do it here, because then they can have all the equipment here as well. But, you know, because it'll just either be in the training room or here, you know, and there's actually like 3 easy rooms we could do if we needed to. You know, after hours on a Wednesday night, there generally isn't a lot going on in this building.
Yeah.
So we would be fine finding meeting space. It would probably be easier to do it here, just so you, and all the notifications if somebody did want to come for the public meeting or things like that. So that would be better if they came here. And I haven't confirmed everything with her, but I wanted to first check with you and make sure, let's think, if we had it here, had them watch a regular business meeting. I wouldn't have any other presentations, because obviously you have high school students giving their presentations of their STEM activities. And I thought it was a really great opportunity, since the commission had indicated in November that you guys really wanted to take on more education and outreach and do more volunteer activities in the community. So I thought that was a really good idea. So if you're okay with it, I'll charge forward with it. I see a lot of heads nodding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay with it.
Okay. And speaking of kind of, and just kind of see where you guys are with the water resource professionals, Part of my professional goals is actually linked to this august body. I am continuing to pursue staff and other agency presenters for these meetings, and I'm currently looking at, you know, having Bob Patterson, who's our local source control business pollution prevention person, and the county's veg management people to come out and talk. Jeff with the next 6-year capital project plan, as well as the stream health report when that comes available. Henry could easily come and talk about the mapping of the infrastructure and the challenges that they have. Scott Melville could talk about code enforcement. Pat Lee could come and talk about the legacy lands and how they target the properties and things like that.
Ooh, I'd like that one.
Vancouver Lake, too.
Yes. That is another one on there that I have. And then one of the others that it's becoming more and more important, both at the county as well as at the state level, on a systemic basis. And I know people don't necessarily think of it this way, but I think it's important to start the dialogue and conversation. But I would really like to have one of our Title VI people or the county's Diversity, Equity, and Integration Committee, somebody come in and talk about the impacts of stormwater and clean water and the things that we do on overburdened populations and how those affect.
That would be great.
Because I know that that's something that is in public works and even the other things, that what we do as government and what we do really does impact, and it proportionately impacts the more overburdened populations. So we want to make sure that we have that. That's one of the reasons, actually, you've probably noticed on our flyer, you know, on our sign-in sheet, we actually have the languages in the English in the top four or five languages in the county. So if somebody did come and wanted to hear and they wanted to attend and participate, I have the number for language line. I can set it up and we can do it with having somebody here or providing some opportunity for them to get the information that they need. So that's one of the things that, you know, we're trying to work on and creating more of an equity. And so I'm actually on the county's equity, the EDIG committee, and so that's one of the things that we're really emphasizing and doing more and bringing this in and trying to change the culture of the county employees as well as the population. So, and I know that that's one of the questions that Rod has to answer for the annual report that we do to ecology, is how are we addressing these issues. So I think it's something that would be really good to have. So these are some of the things that I've been thinking about. So, and obviously there's a balancing act there of education and business and being able to get things done. So if there's any particular interests, in the interest of time, email them to me or tell me next meeting and we can work on something there and how much you'd like to have devoted to it.
I think these are all great ideas, Alice, and maybe you could send out the list and we could do a little prioritization, because I don't think we meet enough to cover everything.
Yeah. Well, and we can definitely try, and maybe I was thinking in my head maybe the October one, depending on what we have with strategic planning, maybe that could be a really heavy-centric for presentations. And then have more of the other business meetings for the other. So,
but one question: will our May meeting have some presentations, or
the kids
will only be
the business and the kids? I'm not going to do anything else.
So business, you mean it will be the
be
staff liaison and the working
and
group updates.
Yep, and whatever else you want to cover, because I think that's important to have. Because I know Eric will talk. He'll either give his report or he'll talk about all the Earth Day and the Watershed Congress, and there's a whole bunch of, he always has a lot of things going on in March, April, and May, so he'll have a little bit more to say with that. But
we'll
I'm
probably see how far we get with the strategic planning thing in March and the next one, and try to finish that out in May, I'd like to.
Yeah, exactly. So, and staff's working really hard on the permit and the requirements. Rod is, we're nearly finished with the stormwater technical manual. That's all four books that are, you know, about 6 feet high, I think, with all the appendices and everything that goes with it. We're almost finished. That's he's going to submit that to get review and have feedback before the deadline of June 30th. And then stormwater management plan, and I'll just check that off at the bottom of the agenda, is nearly finished as well. It's going to go out with the report. As soon as it's finished, I will email it out. If you have any questions or you have any comments, feel free to let us know. You can email me or Rod. It'll obviously go out onto the website as well, and since it's open for public comment all year long, and I always keep a copy of it in my office, so if anybody needs to see the hard copy, if they're available, if they didn't have computer access, it's there. So, and the Heritage Farm Master Plan is being presented, I think, for adoption next Tuesday, the 10th at 10 a.m., which is a different time because of some scheduling that happened this week. They moved the meeting to next week at 10 in the morning. And I think that's it for me.
One question about that. Did we want to have someone there to make any kind of a public statement? We sent two letters, I think, at this point. Mm-hmm. One during the comment period, and then one to the, and that was to Pat, and then one to the council during the workshop sessions. Do we need to do anything else? And can anybody do, who can do that?
I'm planning to attend, but I'll be testifying with a different hat on.
Yeah.
I think as much as we talked about it, it would be nice to have somebody attend. I cannot myself that day.
I don't think I can either at this point.
We're both out of town.
Next week at 10?
Yeah, at 10 a.m.
I can see.
We did make another point about it during the council, during the annual report.
I think, so I'll be testifying on behalf of Friends of Clark County. I don't think anything controversial. That'll probably take up my 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I could just mention, and
yeah,
here is this, and here's this letter that was previously submitted. You know, if you feel comfortable with that, or...
Yeah, I don't think that'd be a good idea.
No, okay.
It was a great thought, but I don't know that that's
what we
want to do.
If I go, what would I say to testify? What are you thinking?
Just reiterating the high points of the letter,
right.
You know, that we endorse these particular activities. And along with that, well, Greg left rats. I just wanted to say that staff did a great job at getting the most money they could out of Ecology for that project.
Wow.
So you might want to pass that on to Greg. I think, you know, some statement along those lines would be... Maybe we could talk.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
It would be good to mention that amount. The funds that came through.
Okay. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Good if I move to working groups?
Go for it.
High-speed report there.
Okay, it will be passed. Research group has met once, and Alice was there for part of it, and we did a little bit of the strategic planning discussion. We are definitely going to meet again at least one more time, and we're actively working on getting in touch with all the different groups and then formatting something that we can all look at, well, that our internal group can look at so we can make a presentation later.
Marie, outreach.
So Matt and I are going to get together on Monday, and then we're going to go to the NACA meeting. So we'll talk about what we need to do. I'm sorry Eric left because I was going to have some questions, but I can email him. The Climbline Fishing Derby is late this year. It's May 1st and 2nd. There's just other conflicts at the park. And Earth Day looks like it's 4/18. We'll probably talk about getting this out and about to a wider audience. There is a Women in Water Leadership Symposium at the Resource Center on April 16th. If you gals, great. I've gone the past 2 years, Michelle and I were both there last year. Really good group of people.
quite spendy. It's quite spendy.
$150.
Yeah.
Well, are there scholarships?
I think there are scholarships.
Yeah, you should check.
Okay. Definitely worth it. And they give you lunch
if you need.
Yeah, we'll sneak in.
Yeah.
We'll see who didn't pick up their name tag.
Okay, there are no photos, so.
Okay, that's all I had.
Actually, nothing on partnerships. I sent out an email to try to set up a time to get together, if that were the way that we were going to do the follow-up on the draft that you sent out, to try to come up with, and got no responses, guys. So I can send it out again tomorrow or whatever, but
I'll look for it.
Try to, yeah. You have to look for it. So.
Yeah, I didn't get
it. It's been a while. It's been like the day after you sent that out. So anyway, I'll do it again. Let's see if we can figure out some way to get together, even do it by phone if that's the best given our schedules.
Yeah, and then I thought that would work best if, as I proposed, if we all kind of come in with a draft, and then I don't know what else we have on the agenda for this special meeting, if we're able to, if that's it. So that way I figure we could get a head start on hammering that out. As far as the annual report presentation update, it was presented. I was talking, having to speak to the pulpit, so my recollection of the...
You in the big room?
Yeah. I thought I'd get to do that casual around the table like you had last year, and they put me in the hot seat.
You're testifying to Congress.
You did great. It went really well.
I normally do not have an issue public speaking, but there's something about that,
that
perspective thing that puts me in a weird headspace. It went well. Our PowerPoint wasn't set up between the liaison they had there with what Alice tried to bring in. So luckily we had the paper copies. We went through it. I tried to present a concept at one point about the idea of, if our jurisdictions in which we governed and paid our taxes were based on our watersheds, how that would kind of set a precursor for how we think about those things. I'm not sure how much of that was interpreted metaphorically versus literally. But the idea is to try to get the ball rolling on that a little bit. There was one point that the council had made with regard to that would be great if that representation was happening within our body, which wasn't exactly my point. But I do think that we actually meet that fairly well. I'm running close on time, but I was actually thinking about that in between that. Trying to figure out the watershed that each of us are in.
Each district?
Yeah, I have a pretty rough idea of what those are, and I think we cover the county pretty well on that, but I don't know if you all could make a note to email me what watershed you're in, and I'll throw that into a little...
Gibbons Creek.
I'll throw that into a little banner for
Whipple
us.
Whipple Creek.
I know you're on the slope, you're on the East Fork. Salmon Creek.
I just moved, so I think I'll have to check my... It's still Salmon Creek. I'm by Curtin Creek, I think.
Okay. So really, other than...
Gibbons Creek, your Washougal River.
Really, other than the North Fork and Burnt Bridge Creek, we've pretty much got the county covered. Burnt Bridge Creek is largely Vancouver's domain, so I think we've got that objective met for them. check that off the list.
Well, and that would be great to state.
Yeah.
Actually, in your way.
Oh, yeah.
We have, I'm speaking for the Clean Water Commission, we have representatives from blah, 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 watersheds. And all of our people work, you can see Heritage Farms as a... as a demonstration site for whatever. Anyway, so you could get both points across.
Yeah,
I didn't think of it at the time. Yeah. I started mulling it over in my head. I was like, actually, I think we've got that pretty well covered and everything.
Yeah.
I do think that we've, have established ourselves, and I'd like to continue having our representatives be people that bring a background of knowledge to the issues at hand. But that idea of having countywide representation by watershed was pretty good. On that, there was another point that came up that's escaping me right now at this time. I know Councillor Lentz had asked, reflecting on that, what if there was something they could do with that, and you know, I mean, I'm just trying to find an eloquent way to be like, figure out what watershed you're in and be aware of that all the time, because I don't really know all the time what counselors' own backgrounds are. It, you know, there's a lot that people, skill sets that people come to the table with, and what you do and don't know and stuff. But it's always unfortunate. It's so rushed. You don't have a whole lot of time. One thing following up on that, and I mentioned this to you with our strategic plan, is that I would like more feedback, not only from the Clean Water Program, if the question ever gets to the council, what they want from us, what they would like to see from this body. Because that's one of the things that are coming up with the strategic vision, is for us to operate within the means that are, you know, most productive, but also knowing, you know, what they want to see with that.
Good question.
Whether that's to be helpful or to avoid not being helpful. And outside of that, yeah, I don't know if anybody had any questions from it, but
I think it was well received. Yeah. You know, and I think even though you couldn't say specifics about which watershed people were from, you did say that it's a broad representation. They didn't seem to push on it so much to get back to the original, you know, we've got to have one person from this or one person from that, et cetera. Although I think that they might have been trending that direction. So I think you're mostly satisfied. I think another point or real statement would say, yeah.
That's not the first time they've asked that question.
No.
They did 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Wanting to know.
I don't know which one existed.
Yeah, they're more focused about where people live or what we're doing as a commission.
Mm-hmm. Was it that they were interested in the watersheds we lived in or their districts?
I think they were looking for a broad county representation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I felt that we had that pretty well.
I think it was taking off of the recommendation from the Clean Water Commission about looking at issues from a watershed basis, mm-hmm. not individual projects, right. piecemealing it together, but looking at the impact on a watershed basis. And they kind of turned that and said, well, what about also, and went a different direction with it, but keeping still with the watershed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my point was not necessarily to representation, but like if we had a precursor to everything we do as a society on the basis of watersheds, then we would be thinking about that in the terms of, you know, lots of times we make decisions completely removed from what those natural boundaries
are. Sounds like they didn't quite get it.
I think it's gonna take a little bit more.
One point that I did make at the end that I think was easy to understand and get was I pointed out the geographical concept that Clark County is really not in the position to have any excuses, that the way the Columbia borders us and the way our watersheds feed out of the north and the east, we're not really downstream of anybody's impacts. So the state of Clark County's watersheds is entirely a result of what Clark County does. And
so except for the Columbia River.
Well, right, except for the Columbia River feeding by, but everything in our territory,
we've done it.
Yeah, if it's in and I made the statement, if we have a healthy watershed, it's because of the decisions we've made, and if we have poor quality watersheds here, it's because of the decisions we've made. So. Review the stormwater management planning. We table that for.
We already did. It's part of my report.
Okay. And we'll get into the strategic planning next time. So, if we're good in general discussion, we'll move to adjourn.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.